to be able to introduce Rabbi Gottlieb. For those of you who have not heard him before, you're in for a big treat. Rabbi Gottlieb is a senior lecturer at Or Samech in Yerushalayim, travels all over the world. We attended Brandeis University together at different times. He did a PhD in philosophy there, was a professor of mathematical logic at Johns Hopkins University, and has some words of chizuk, encouragement, and praise for your being here tonight and for what you will do when you leave here after the conference. Thank you for giving your attention to Rabbi Gottlieb.
Okay. I discovered this conference two and a half hours ago, but I feel that we are partners, that we're working on the same project, and that I'm standing in front of you because of my Rebbe, because of the Boston Rebbe Zatzal, who made me what I am. And I have some ideas that I learned from him that I would like to share with you about Kiruv. Do we have a Chumash Bereishis here? When Avimelech takes Sarah into his palace, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu comes to Avimelech in the Chalom and tells him, "You're going to die." And he says, "I didn't know. They told me that we're brother and sister." So, among other things, it says, "Vayikro Avimelech l'Avraham, vayomer lo, what did you do to us? And what is my failure to you? You brought upon me and my kingdom a great sin. Things that ought not to be done, you did with me." Vayomer Avimelech. Now, Avimelech's been talking up until now. And now it says Vayomer Avimelech again. There's a clout in Mikra. When you have the same speaker and the speaker is mentioned again, it means there's a pause. It's not one long run-on speech. There's a pause in between. So Avimelech said these words to Abraham and was waiting for an answer. And he got no answer. So then it says, Vayomer Avimelech al Abraham, Mora Isa ki Asisa Hadavar Hazeh. What did you see that you did this thing? Vayomer Avraham. And Avraham gives him an answer. The question is, why did Avraham not answer the first question and yes answer the second question? If you look at it carefully and ask yourself, what attitude is Avimelech expressing in his first question? He says, "Me asi solonu, me chatosi loch. What have you done to us? What was my sin to you? Kiveis alai v'amam alchi chatorg lo. You brought upon me and my kingdom a great sin. Masim shalhi asu asisi madi. You did things to me that should not be done." When Avimelech speaks that way, his attitude is, "You are a criminal. You have wronged me. You have injured me." Avimelech is standing in judgment on Avraham. Avraham's attitude at this point is, if you think that you can judge me, if you think you're in the right, If you think you have the ability to understand what I'm doing, and you can draw your own conclusions, then I can't talk to you because you're not listening. There's nobody home to hear the message that I have to deliver. There's nobody listening. So he's silent. But then Abimelech says, Moro iso ki asiso sadover hazeh. Those words bespeak an entirely different attitude. Number one, you wouldn't have done it unless you saw something. And number two, I don't know what you saw. And I want to know what you saw. That openness, that self-critique, I don't know what you saw. Abimelech is realizing, Avraham, you are a serious person. You don't do something stam. You don't make mistakes of a silly kind. You did something, it must have been a reason, and I don't know what it is, and I want to know what it is. So Avraham Avinu says, you're listening? Then I have something to tell you. Listen to what Avraham Avinu tells him. Vayomar Avraham, ki omarti, rak ein yiras Elokim b'mokoyim hazeh v'haraguni alvar ishti. The correct translation of the Hebrew is, the only thing that's missing in this place is Yiras Elokim. You have everything else. The only thing that's lacking is Yiras Elokim. After all, how did Abimelech respond to Kadosh Baruch Hu in the dream? Vayomer, Hashem, Hagoy gam tzadik taharog. Hello, who am I? Li achosihi. He am ra ochihi. Besom levavi uvaniki on kapai asisi zos. This is a man that can talk about tzaddik. He can talk about tom leiv. He can talk about niki on kapayim. This man is not a savage. This man is not a barbarian. He has moral concepts. He has legal concepts. He has a developed civilization. And Avraham says to him, you're right. You're right. You're a developed person. You're civilized. You have a culture. You have moral concepts, legal concepts. There's no fear of a Kodesh Baruch Hu in this place, and you'll kill me for my wife. This message is, your civilization is rotten. It's rotten. It has all the veneer, all the surface, all the shitchias, and it's rotten at the core. And it will not prevent you from the most horrible crime. This message is as contemporary as today. Think of the Holocaust. Who authored the Holocaust? The spitz of Western civilization, Germany. Now, essentially, this is the message we have to convey. Sugar-coated, and gradually, and in stages, and so forth and so on. But the lesson from Avinu is, pick your battles. Pick your battles. Rabbi Zatzal told me many, many years ago, to go into Kiruv, you have to be a little crazy. A little crazy. Or very, very idealistic, which is probably close to the same thing. But once you get in, choose your battles. Look for people who are open, who are searching, who are willing, who are fair, who are objective, who will hear what you have to say. Don't go after the difficult case because of the challenge. Or as he put it to me directly, if you see Rachmana Litzlan, you see a Yid wearing a tzlav, and your heart breaks, and you think, this is a Yiddish and a Shama, and you think, I've got to save this person, said the Rebbe, resist that. Because if he's wearing a tzlav, he's not normal. He's not normal. And the enormous time and effort you will invest in him, her, will be time that you could have spent on three other people. And he said, after 120 years, you'll come up to Shemayim And those other three neshamas that you didn't reach will come before you and they'll say, why did you throw us away? Why did you sacrifice us for that one? Why was that one worth more than all three of us? Here's where you have to be very hard-headed, very practical. You have to put your efforts into those who are fair, who are open, who are objective, who are psychologically normal, who are listening. And the attitude that the Rebbe Zatzal projected is really found in the Mesilas Yesharim. Mesilas Yesharim says, Avas Hashem, what greater ahava could you show for a person who is a parent than if that person who is a parent has children who are in trouble, children who are in danger, to save those children and bring them back to the parent? I imagine that all of you, or almost all of you, are parents. Just in your imagination, I don't wish it on anybody, Rahman al-Islam, but imagine you had a child who had a problem, some danger, and someone restored the child to you. Is there anything anyone could do for you more than save your child? That's what you're doing in Kiruv. You're saving a Kodesh Baruch Hu's children for him. And there's nothing that you can do for a Kodesh Baruch Hu that he appreciates more than saving his children for him. And I want to reinforce something which this is something that you probably don't know. I'm losing it. Kodesh Baruch Hu tells Avraham Avinu that a stone is going to be judged, is going to be destroyed. But he doesn't tell him straight out. He says, HaMachaseh ani me Avraham asher ani oseh, shall I hide from Avraham what I'm going to do? Ki yedativ, l'mayin yitzav, esponu be'yves of Acharov, l'shmur derech Hashem. I know him, that he's going to command his children, his household, to follow the Derech Hashem. So the Chasam Sofer says, in Gemara Lashon, there's a Havamina and there's a Maskana here. First, the Gemara Lashon says, shall I hide? Means a thought, maybe I should hide from him. I should hide from Havamina what I'm doing. And then he says, no, I won't hide it. So what's the Havamina, what's the Maskana? Why is the thought that I'll hide it? Says the Chasam Sofer, something really quite, I would say, quite shocking. Chasam Sofer says, Avraham Avinu was not ra'ui for nevuah. He was not worthy of nevuah. Why? Because one of the requirements to be able to have nevuah is a kind of inner aliyas ha'neshama. And that inner aliyas ha'neshama requires a certain amount of hisbodedus, meditation, working on one's inner midos. It requires time for reflection. And Avraham Avinu didn't have it. He didn't have it, and therefore he wasn't personally roy for nevuah. HaMechaseh ani me'Avraham. Maybe I should hide it from him. But then Kodesh Baruch Hu says, no, I will not hide it from him. Why? Ki yedativ l'mayin yitzav esponu be'yves of Acharov. Because I know that he lacks this inner aliyas ha'neshama, he lacks this hisbodedus, this meditation, this inner focus, because he's investing himself in teaching and training his household, which includes thousands of converts. Ramban says there were tens of thousands that Avraham and Sarah were able to be mekarev. Because he didn't have that inner aliyas haneshama, because of his investment in bringing people closer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so HaKadosh Baruch Hu said he will not lose out. He will not lose out. And when you've set aside in your busy schedule 20 minutes for mincha, 20 minutes, maybe it happened once a week, you have 20 minutes for mincha, you think, say ashrei, say it slowly, you think about it, and I'm going to daven. And the phone call comes, and one of the people you're connected to needs you. And you think, there goes my mincha. Okay, you'll daven. Let's say you shouldn't daven. But, you know, I've got to give this person 13 or 14 minutes, and I'll be left with a 6-minute mincha. What happened to my precious mincha? You will not lose out because of that. You will not lose out because of that. Because you're doing for HaKadosh Baruch Hu the greatest ahava that can be done. You're bringing His children back to Him. He as a parent. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises that you will not lose out because of that. And something that I'm sure you're aware of, but it's very important to keep in mind. You never know the effects of your efforts. Don't ever measure the effects of your efforts by the results that you see. This is in the small term and the long term. You talk to someone, you get a reaction. Don't ever make the mistake of thinking that the reaction that you get at the moment is really the impact that you had. People respond defensively. People respond self-protectively. You may hit the person in a sensitive spot and the person doesn't want to show it. The person will struggle with what you said later, alone, where you don't see the impact that you made on the person. You may never know the impact that you had on the person. When I came to Or Sameach 100 years ago, there was a boy there, very tough, quiet, intelligent. From time to time, he would make a remark, and every remark he made was negative. And after 3 months, he left. Never wrote, never came in contact, never heard of him. 14 years later, I was in Los Angeles, I was speaking, someone comes up to me afterwards and says, Jill, you remember me? I said, no. He said, well, I'm that boy. I'm that boy from 14 years ago. I said, what happened? He's obviously from. He said, well, I heard what you said, and I thought about it for 7 years. He thought about it for 7 years. And after 7 years, he said, I thought you were right. He's married, he has a family, he's living in Passaic. Last year he went to the Eretz Yisrael. And he was in Los Angeles on business, and he saw my name, that I was giving his year, so he stopped in to say thank you. And if I hadn't been there, because Baruch Hu had not arranged that I should be there, and he should see the persomat, and he would come in, I wouldn't know to this day. Don't ever measure what you're doing on the reaction that you see. You don't know what an effect it can have. You can speak to somebody, and that person can be impressed. And speak to somebody else, and that somebody else can get in touch with somebody else who's doing kiruv because of that chain. That other person gets involved, and you'll never hear about it. Don't ever be discouraged by the results you don't see, because the ripple effects are without limit. You talk about how many people do you affect. Let's think of Rachel, Eishes Rabbi Akiva. So you know the story. You know how dramatic it is. What did she see in Rabbi Akiva? She saw good midos, and she saw tzniyus. She saw tzniyus in Rabbi Akiva. That's what the Gemara says. And she gave up her father's house and her father's support and slept on straw and pushed, and there was no response. Year after year, they had a child, there was no response. And year after year, she's pushing and there's no response. Till when the child starts to learn at the age of 5. So how many years were they married already? 6 years, more. And then he becomes Rabbi Akiva. Okay, but it's not only that he became Rabbi Akiva, he brought home with him 24,000 Talmidim. And then when, now in Yimei HaSfira, he lost the Talmidim, but then he had 5 Talmidim afterwards who built the whole world. So what did Rachel accomplish? It isn't that she accomplished, that she made her husband into something. He became the Gadol Hador. He became the Tzinor of Torah. He was the Gadol Hador. All the Torah that we have, his Torah coming from Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai, whose Yortzeit we're going to celebrate next week in Yetzer Hashem, was Rabbi Akiva's Talmud. Indeed, the Pesach says that the celebration of Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai's Yortzeit, we really should have made for Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva died on Kiddush Hashem, and we don't do it for a case like that. So what did she do? She, in a sense, saved all of Klal Yisrael. So you don't know what you're accomplishing. Because you may work and work and work, and you see one or two or three people, you don't know what that person is at Sinor to bring into the world, which is what you accomplished, what you provided. So don't ever count the effects of your efforts by the things the numbers that you see. As I said before, Avraham Avinu and Sari Menu were makarev tens of thousands of people. What happened to those people? Yaakov Avinu goes down to Mitzrayim with Shivim Nefesh. 70. What happened to the tens of thousands? Well, in terms of open history, they were lost. By the way, if you'll ever hear someone who'll tell you, but archaeologists will tell you that there were Jews in the land of Israel, or people practicing Judaism in the land of Israel, when the Torah says that we were in Mitzrayim, and that must have meant that there were various tribes, and the tribes were nomadic tribes, and they came in at different times, and the whole story of the conquest is not a true story. This is one big piece of apocryphal that you might hear. You can answer very simply, we know that. Because Avram and Sarah, Yitzchak and Rivka, Yaakov and Rachel and Leah, left behind these tens of thousands of people. When you, as archaeologists, dig up homes that look like they have Jewish marks, of course we know that. That's that population that got left behind. That's not the Jewish people as we know it, so archaeologists won't know the difference. How did they feel that all those people got lost? Did the Avos feel that their efforts were in vain? They brought all these people under the idea of the Borei Olam, and they just disappeared. No, the Mefarshim say that every one of those neshamas came back as Gerim. Those neshamas weren't lost, so they didn't make it in that generation. They made it in a future generation. No effort is lost. No effort is lost. Just as the Shlach Kodesh says, and I heard it, the name of the Stipler, and then came across it in the head of the Shastel of Blum, they brought down the Shlach Kodesh. And then I saw it's Gemara and Brachas. Every tefillah, every sincere tefillah is answered yes. Every sincere tefillah is answered yes. And here's a proof of it. You know that the Shemoneh Esrei is divided into three parts. There's Shevach, Bakasha, and Hodoya. For decades, it bothered me. I understand why you should praise the Kodesh Baruch Hu. I understand why you have to ask. The real function of tefillah is to ask. I understand why I have to say thank you. But if it were up to me, I would have put the thank you first. Why put the thank you after the Bakasha? You want to show that you appreciate HaKadosh Baruch Hu. First be Mishabeach, and then thank him for what he's done for you, and then say, please, I need these things also. The Gemara Brachos makes it clear that when you put Hodoya at the end, you're saying thank you because he's already said yes to what you asked for. You're saying thank you for now. Imagine you're working. You haven't had a raise in 3 years. You go to your boss, it's in July, and you say to him, you know, I'm doing a good job, and things are progressing, and you haven't had a raise in 3 years. I think I deserve a raise. So the boss says, I'll take it up with the management, takes it up with the management. A week later, he comes back, and he says, you're right, they agree with you. January 1st, your pay is going up by 10%. Do you say thank you in July? You bet. You say thank you right away. Even though the pay is only going up 6 months later, but you got an agreement. Every sincere tefillah is answered yes. It might not be answered right away. It might be answered for your children or your grandchildren or other people who are close to you. It might be answered in a form that you don't recognize, but every sincere tefillah is answered yes. So that being the case, the same thing's true with respect to the people you're working with, for whom, of course, you daven, and you have to feel that the davening, is crucial. It's crucial. Nothing is done without Siyata D'Shemaya, and certainly not Kiruv. And the tefillah that you have to have for these people whom HaKadosh Baruch Hu puts in our path so that we'll be able to do something for them, the tefillah has to be absolutely, absolutely fundamental in your efforts for them. And if you daven for them, something will happen. Something will happen. We in Rosameach, in many cases, have traced back the people who come to us. And very often, they come from people who we know cried at Lech Benchen, and fathers who cried in Fila for these children. And that's why they ended up coming to us and being able to come back. There's an element in Kiruv which I find that people who are sensitive and people who have high ideals and high values find very difficult. That element they find very difficult. And that is the element of sharing yourself with the Talmud. We have a very important midah of tznius. And tznius is a midah for men, as it is for women, though it's more important for women than it is for men. But it's also a midah for men. Hatznei lecha sim elokecha is a pasuk that applies to both men and women. And there's a natural reluctance to share personally with the person you're trying to have hashpah on. And especially if there's anything in your life that isn't what you would regard as the spitz of kedusha, the spitz of ideal Jewish behavior, then there's a certain natural embarrassment that you don't want to share those things. I encourage you to share yourselves with your talmidos. I encourage you to share yourself. Especially if you're a Balas Tshuva, or if, when you were young, you did things that you wouldn't do today, there's absolutely no reason not to say, I mean, that also makes you a Balas Tshuva, right? To say, you know, when I was younger, I did this and I did that, though I probably wouldn't do it today, but when I was younger, I did this. Now, what are you communicating? Many of you are aware that there's something called a message and something called the meta-message. Maybe you've read the works of Deborah Tannen, who used to be Deborah Tannenbaum, but she shortened her name. She works in communication. If I ask you a question, so the message is, I need the answer to this question. The meta-message is, I think you probably know the answer, number one. Number two, I think you're probably willing to help me by giving me the answer. So by asking you the question, I'm investing in you. I'm building you up. That's the implication of the message. If someone asks a question, I say, what? That's bothering you? So the meta-message is, shouldn't be bothering you. And if it really is bothering the person, then he's going to feel repulsed. What do you mean? It is bothering me. Why do you think it shouldn't bother me? You have to be very careful about the meta-message in what you say. So here, when you say, you know, when I was younger, I did this. I don't do it anymore, but this is what I did. So you're saying, I'm not embarrassed to talk about it with you. I'm not disowning my past. I don't regard myself as puzzled that I did these things. And the meta message is, I won't regard you as puzzled either. And if you do these kinds of things, you can talk to me about them. I will not be shocked. I will not be repulsed. I will not feel that you're degraded, just as I don't feel that my own childhood was degrading. That's what I did at that time, and now I don't do that anymore. Anything which can build a bridge with the other person. Let me give you a very, very important yesod. When you are dealing with a person from the outside, under any conditions, the one question in that person's mind is, do I want to be more like that? Do I want to be more like her? Is that what I want? That's the question. And therefore, everything you do has to contribute to an answer to that question. That determines how you dress and how you speak, what vocabulary you use, what examples you use. If you show yourself to be open-minded and broad-minded, then you're saying to the person, if you chose to be more like me, you could also have the same, some of the same interests and some of the same ideas and some of the same experiences. We went to camp. I remember when I was a girl, we went to camp and we went boating and we climbed mountains. So this person who's 36 likes to go boating or likes to climb mountains. She knows you're willing to talk about that. You don't look at that as something that's trafe. Okay, maybe it's childish and maybe you wouldn't do it now, but so what? You're not afraid of it. And if she wants to talk to you about boating or climbing mountains, you'll probably listen. So she feels safe. She feels that she can share with you. Also, if she has questions, how can she trust that you'll understand her questions if your life experience is totally different from hers? Okay, there are great people like the Rebbe Zatzal who came from a very different life background. When I told Talmidim who came in contact with him that he never went to college, they couldn't believe it because he was brilliant and because he was a very good listener. And whatever you told him, he chapped, and then he would have something to ask, a follow-up question, and he would participate in it, and people would think, my gosh, you know, he must have gone to Harvard. He knows everything. He's a very intelligent, very good listener, very sharp, and he cared. He reached out for that point in the neshama. Okay, but we don't have those kinds of gifts. But if you have had any experience of that kind, for example, I have Talmidim who asked me about movies. So I tell them, well, the truth is, I haven't seen a movie in 45 years. But sometimes I read the reviews of movies. So I do know something about what that movie was about. Then the child... I'll tell you one more. The time is short. We had one boy who came in to the yeshiva by Hashkocha Pratis, but he didn't know that. And he was there for a whole day. And I was told, he's been here all day, he's ready to leave. You've got to do something to hold him. Good. So he came and sat down in the office with me, and talking to him. He's from Oberlin College. Oberlin, I happen to know, because I'm a university person. It's a place where they do a lot of arts. And I said to him, you're involved in arts, music? Yes, he's involved in graphic arts. Okay. My wife taught me something about art. So I said, I talked to him about art. Talked to him about this pine painter and that painter and this style and that style. We talked about art for about 3/4 of an hour. He is today a teacher in seminaries in Yerushalayim. He has a beautiful family. It was 3/4 of an hour talking about art that held him. Because he felt he could step in here and not be lost to his whole past. Not be cut off from his whole past. That was the key. That was the shalom lishma for the sake of the lishma. So I urge you, it's not easy because here, every midah has a right use and a wrong use. Have us kanomer lasas rotzon avicha shebashamayim, be brazen as a leopard to do the will of your Father in heaven, but oz panim legehenim, the same Pirkei Avos. And oz panim goes down. So are you supposed to be an oz panim or not supposed to be an oz panim? It depends upon the conditions and the circumstances. And here, the wonderful midah of tzniyus, I don't want to attract attention. I don't need to have recognition. I don't need a pat on the back. I don't need to stand out. But here I think you should try to share it with the other person. Try to make contact with common experiences with the other person so the other person will feel safe and feel understood and feel encouraged to be in contact with you. And in that way, of course, the goal is not just to teach material, of course. As the Rebbe Zatzal told me when I once spoke at a Torah Masar convention, tell them that the goal of Chinuch is that the children should become Ovdei Hashem. That's the goal. Period! Not more Mishnayos or more Musar or more Chumash or more Chidushim. The goal is that you should become Ovdei Hashem. That's the goal of all Chinuch. And of course, that's the goal of Kiruv. Kodesh Baruch should give you the strength, the inspiration, the wisdom, the sensitivity, the time, time that you can invest in this wonderful, wonderful effort. It's an effort which has turned around a great many people in the last 40 years. The lowest estimate that I've seen is of 250,000 Bali tshuva. There are whole cities that are made of Bali tshuva. And there are cities where the Bali tshuva have faded into the woodwork, which is Baruch Hashem, the greatest hatzlacha, where they can present themselves without having to wear a Bali tshuva label. But they're there, and they're building the whole of Klal Yisrael. You have a share, God l'ma'asim and a'oyser. I'll leave you with this one word. Everybody knows God l'ma'asim and a'oyser, but there's another chazal, God l'ma'asim ke'oyser, that they're equal. So there's a parish in the Ein Yaakov called the Yad Aharon. And he says, what's the difference? God l'ma'asim ke'oyser, they're equal, is when Reuven wants to do a mitzvah and he doesn't have the means to do it with. Shimon gives him the means, and in that way, Reuven can do the mitzvah. Then they're equal. God l'ma'asim min ha'oyser means that Reuven doesn't want to do the mitzvah. He's not interested in the mitzvah. And Shimon gives him the motivation to do the mitzvah. Then Shimon is bigger than Reuven, because it's Shimon's rotzon living in Reuven's body that moves him to do the mitzvah. And all of Reuven's mitzvahs count also for Shimon. All of Reuven's mitzvahs count also for Shimon. And this is what you are building for yourself, for your families, azah schus, that every one of these people that you talk to, and any mitzvah that they do, is a schus for you and for your families. Because Baruch Hashem should bless you with success.